For WBAI News in New York, I'm Linda Perry. Our humanity will not be broken. Abolish ICE. ICE detains to enrich corporations. These are signs carried by over 1,000 women in Washington, D.C. today. The effort is to end the criminalization of immigrant families and children seeking safety and a better life. They marched to abolish ICE, Immigration Customs Enforcement, and end all detention camps and reunite children and families separated by Donald Trump administration immigration policies. WBAI caught up with Jatsidi Savad with Make the Road New York. She's standing with protesters right in front of the Department of Justice.
Well, thousands of women from all over the United States are here gathered in two demand an end to family separation, demand for families not to be detained anymore, and call for the abolishment of ICE.
Are there women affected by the immigration policy? Tell us a little bit about the women who were there.
Well, there are women of all types of races, all ethnicities, and of all socioeconomic backgrounds, immigrant or not. We're here united. We're showing that we're outraged with what's happening with this government. We're outraged by what's happening with the Trump administration is doing to our children and immigrants in general.
What's your personal story?
Myself, I am a DACA recipient, so I know what it feels like to have that fear of being separated from your family. I have my brothers are U.S. citizens, so I do fear one day being separated for them because I am a DACA recipient and because we know that this Trump administration has ended DACA and continuously attacks our immigrant community. And his latest attack is what he's doing to these children and what he's doing to these families at the border and all over the country.
And so here in New York, we know that there are more than 300 children who were taken from the southern border and put in various facilities here in New York. And some of you were very active in going to the airport, correct, to make sure that they saw that they had supporters?
Yes, Make the Road, along with other organizations, we made sure that we were at LaGuardia when these children were arriving to New York to show them that they're not alone, that they have a community that outside that's backing them up, and that is going to continue supporting them.
Tell us what the scene is like there.
Well, there's thousands of women, and we're all marching. We're all showing our commitment to the immigrant community, to these children. We're chanting things like the people united will never be divided. We're making sure that this administration knows loud and clear that we're going to keep on fighting.
What effect do you think that this protest will have?
Well, we were supposed to send a clear message to this administration that it needs to stop this family detention, that the executive order that President Trump signed is not a solution to the chaos that he caused, that this is going to lead to family detention, and we're not going to stand by this, and we're going to keep on fighting, and we need to take it to the streets like we have and like we're doing right now, we will.
And, you know, the idea was there was an outcry over the separation of children. So then he said, okay, we'll detain families.
Exactly. This is what his executive order has done. This is no better. This is not a solution. And that's why we're here today in Washington, letting him know that we will not be fooled by his executive order and that we're going to continue fighting until there's an end to family detention.
Jatsidi Savad with Make the Road New York. In Maryland, there was a shooting at the Capital Gazette in Anne Arundel County, a paper owned by the Baltimore Sun. Officials say there were several fatalities. One suspect is in custody. A crime reporter at the newspaper, Phil Davis, tweeted the gunman shot through a glass door and opened fire on employees. He added, "There's nothing more terrifying than hearing multiple people get shot while you're under your desk and then hear the gunman reload." In other news, the fight is gearing up over the replacement for Justice Anthony Kennedy, who announced his retirement yesterday. Donald Trump said he would start the effort to replace Kennedy immediately and would pick from a list of 25 names he updated last year. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell declared that the Senate will vote to confirm Justice Kennedy's successor this fall. Democrats want this election to wait until after the elections in November, and they point to the way Republicans held up Merrick Garland's nomination. Republicans then replaced him with Neil Gorsuch. Now Democrats, who are positioning themselves for a 2020 run, spoke out today on the steps of the Supreme Court. Here's New York Senator Kirsten Gillibrand.
This is a battle line that has been drawn that literally will put women's lives at risk, that undermines our civil rights, our human rights. This is a line that's been drawn about whether we are going to criminalize women, whether we are going to be arresting women for making decisions about their bodies.
New Jersey Senator Cory Booker.
We now must fight.
Woo!
For those of us who believe that love is love, is love, is love,
yeah!
We now must fight.
Yeah!
And so don't tell me anything is impossible. American history is a perpetual testimony to the achievement of the impossible. Don't tell me that this battle is one that's already lost. I do not believe that. Those who worked for abolition didn't believe that. Those who worked for suffrage didn't believe that. Those who worked for civil rights, they kept on fighting, kept on believing. We are the inheritors of their struggle. And so now we must dig in.
People around this country are worried, and they are right to be worried.
Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren.
We've got 50 years of hard work that's on the line. Women's access to safe legal abortions on the line. Marriage equality on the line. Voting rights on the line. Worker rights on the line. Environmental rights on the line. What's at stake? The future of America is at stake. And let me be clear to all of you, and let me be clear to America. We are down in this fight, but we are not out. And understand, people are rising up. Donald Trump is not king. No one makes it to the Supreme Court without going through the United States Senate. And in the United States Senate, everyone has a vote.
Democratic senators speaking out today on the steps of the Supreme Court on the replacement for Justice Anthony Kennedy. And you're listening to the news on listener-sponsored WBAI New York. In other news, European leaders are in Brussels for 2 days of talks on migration that German Chancellor Angela Merkel describes as make or break for the Union. They are also discussing security, transatlantic trade, Brexit, Eurozone reform, and their troubled ties with Donald Trump. French President Emmanuel Macron said this summit's also a place for an important discussion on immigration. He says this isn't a new issue. Europe has been living with it since 2015. We all face a simple choice. He says, do we want national solutions or do we believe in European solutions in cooperation? For my part, I will defend European solutions in cooperation with the European Union. And Vice President Mike Pence is urging Latin American countries to help isolate Venezuela in a visit to Ecuador today. In a press conference with the president of Ecuador, he says, one specific threat to our collective security is the ongoing collapse of Venezuela into dictatorship, deprivation, and despair. Pence said the U.S. offered to provide $2 million in assistance to Ecuador to handle the growing influx of migrants, whose numbers are overwhelming social service agencies in countries all over Latin America. On Wednesday, Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro called Pence a poisonous viper. He promised to defeat what he called efforts to overthrow his government. One of the ways the U.S. was active in destabilizing Venezuela is through its attempt to delegitimize the Maduro re-election. At the Left Forum in New York City, Afia Wangaza, the founding director of the Malcolm X Center for Self-Determination, presented a firsthand account of the Venezuelan election. Echoing Jimmy Carter, she said the country has one of the best electoral processes in the world. Maduro claimed victory with 68% of the vote, yet his win was refuted by the U.S. in favor of opposition forces. Wangaza represented the Black Alliance for Peace in a delegation to observe the national election on May 20th. Afia Wangaza.
The United States took the position at the outset that whatever the outcome of the election was, that it was not going to accept it. That it attempted to interfere with the process by first demanding, having its minions demand an early election. And once Maduro agreed to early elections and it became clear that they were not going to win early elections, then the United States had them and did join them in the call for delaying the elections. And the Venezuelan people said, no, you're not going to interfere with our elections, manipulate us the way you manipulate folks in the United States. We're going forward with our elections. So then the opposition called for a stay away or a boycott of the election, the which failed them, although they had some opposition that did participate. In conjunction with that, as I said, there's no campaigning that goes on the day of an election. However, there was a rally that we attended in one of the new neighborhoods that replaced the number, one of the 2 million houses, low income to free housing, that the government has built while the United States is getting rid of public housing as fast as it can, and affordable housing, where there was a rally of the people in that who lived in that neighborhood, and they said, we are fully aware of what we had, where we came from, where we are, and where we have to go, and we're fully prepared to fight for it. So those people showed up to vote, and they, as an expression of resistance and a way of protesting U.S. quote-unquote meddling in their elections. The process itself was amazing.
So one other thing, and finally, you hear a lot about how people are hungry and starving in Venezuela, and talk to us about that a bit. Is that disinformation as well?
That is total disinformation. I was aghast watching CNN report the election results, and there was a reporter whose name was, I think her last name was Kelly, who said that the Venezuela has the world's largest oil reserves, and yet people are seen digging through the garbage for the day's meal. And I was amazed to hear this, to hear her say this, and to, first of all, to fail to talk about the fact of the sanctions and the impact of the U.S. sanctions on the oil industry, which is a primary source of income. And secondly, in all of the different places that we went, even places where trash had not been picked up, there was never anyone digging in the garbage for food. In fact, there is a food distribution program in place to ensure that the most vulnerable communities have the basic commodities, forcing the wealthy and the manipulators of the economy to spend their resources in order to have the commodities that they want. So it's entirely misinformation.
So there's free food that's delivered to those communities that are lower
income. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. There's free housing. There's free education from the cradle to, and health care from the cradle to the grave. All of the countries that the United States has attacked have been people-centered, people-oriented, whether you're talking about Iraq, without getting into the internal politics, or you're talking about Libya, or you're talking about Venezuela. It is a way to defeat the emergence of socialism and a people-centered economy.
Afia Wangaza, founding member and executive director of the Malcolm X Center for Self-Determination. And you're listening to the news on listener-sponsored WBAI in New York. In other news, Governor Andrew Cuomo issued an executive order on Wednesday in response to the Supreme Court's ruling in Janus versus AFSCME in favor of the plaintiff. The court ruled that unions can't force non-union members to pay fair share fees. A study from the Illinois Economic Policy Institute estimated that with Janus in effect, New York stands to lose 136,000 unionized public sector workers, about 10% of the state's public workforce. With unions under attack from conservative forces, the governor says his executive order is an effort to shield union members from anti-union campaigners fanning out across the state. Here's Andrew Cuomo. He addresses the choice of a replacement for Justice Anthony Kennedy, who announced his retirement yesterday first, and then he goes on to speak on the reason for his executive order. Governor Cuomo.
I would urge the Senate Democrats to be very careful before they confirm another judge. They should not confirm another partisan judge, another political judge. We want a justice of the Supreme Court who is fair and objective and open-minded and makes a decision on the facts of the case, as opposed to coming with a predisposition and a political ideology that they either bring themselves or they're transferring from the president. The Supreme Court was not supposed to be a political arm of the president of the United States. So I would strongly urge them not to confirm any justice unless we know it is a fair and objective, nonpartisan, non-biased justice. And I would go a step further and say they shouldn't confirm any justice until after the election. And let's see what the people of this country say in the election. And if the Republicans balk, say, well, this is exactly your rationale when you wouldn't confirm a justice for President Obama. You said, well, it was close to an election. Let's see what the people say. Well, we're close to an election now. And let's see what the people say. About what this, the direction of this country and the actions of this president. In New York, we're going to do everything we can to protect the labor movement. We're going to start today by signing an executive order whereby the lists and information of government employees will not be provided through the FOIL mechanism to entities that request it. This is part of a political movement. There are groups that are trying to harass government employees and harass government employees into leaving the union. There have been incidents of this across the country, mm-hmm. and we're not going to subject government employees to a political organization's harassment. So I'm going to sign an executive order now that that keeps the lists of government employees private and protects their personal privacy. I'm also going to be proposing legislation that affords that same protection to all government employees in the state, local governments, et cetera, not just employees that are covered by a state executive order, which is primarily binding on state agencies as opposed to local agencies.
Cuomo is flanked by union bosses. Some praise his efforts as governor. Others say they don't always agree with him, but do in his effort to protect unions across the state. First Union President Mario Salento, he's New York State President of AFL-CIO. He says the labor movement is under attack in this country like never before, as well as middle-class working men and women, whether union members or not. Salento.
The labor movement has the bullseye on its back, and the reason for that is this. The right-wing conservative ideologues the governor alluded to understand one very simple truth, and that's this, that when the labor movement is strong and vibrant and successful, we not only improve the lives of our members, but we raise the standard of living and the quality of life for all working men and women. And that's really the key here. We have the target, but everyone is affected. And that's what we really do need to keep in mind today. Yes, it affects organized labor particularly. But let me just say this, Governor, and that is that, you know, we talk about relationships, we talk about working together. The governor said at his State of the State address in early January, mm-hmm. and I'm paraphrasing here, the governor said that day in his remarks that he would work as hard as he can to ensure that the labor movement is as strong tomorrow as it is today. 3 months later, we passed legislation. The governor led the fight to mitigate some of the damage from this decision today. Here we are 3 months later, and the governor is taking action again on an executive order and also pushing forward on legislation. And Governor, those actions speak louder than words. So we do really appreciate that. And I will just say this, Michael and Danny and all labor leaders across the state, public sector, private sector, and building trades, we need to remember one thing. This is not a surprise what happened. Mm-hmm. This, we know, we understood that the Friedrichs case a few years ago would have came to pass, but unfortunately, Justice Scalia passed away. So we've been ready for this, talking to our members, educating them, activating them to continue to pay their dues and be active. So we know that. And we also know, you know, one other thing, and that is that we're all in it together. As I said, private sector and building trade supporting our brothers and sisters.
New York State AFL-CIO President Mario Cilento. New York State AFL-CIO President Mario Cilento. Next up is much-quoted Trump critic with CSEA-AFSCME President Danny Donahue.
Yes, let me say this. There have been times when me and the governor have not always agreed.
Have there?
Yes, I think sometimes. But let me be just as candid about it. When the governor does the right thing, we're more than willing to stand shoulder to shoulder with him. His statements about where he stands with labor make sense. This state was built by labor. It is a labor state. The men and women in this state benefit from the works of labor unions around the country, let alone in New York. We've raised the standards for everything from safety and health to food to making sure that people have retirements and pensions. We recognize that we're all in this together, as Mario says, because there is no attack on the private sector or the public sector. It's an attack on labor. Because if these people can get away with this, everybody's up for grabs. And the real frightening part about it from our perspective is the fact that who are you attacking? The nurse in the hospital, the school crossing guard, the cafeteria worker, the person who drives your children to school every day in a bus. You're attacking them because they don't have a voice. As the governor pointed out, there is laws in place now to protect those people if they disagree with us. But more importantly, what these people want is that let's give up. You can get your money back. You don't need to be part of the union. What do you give up? You give up your voice. You give up the right to disagree with the boss. You give up the right to argue with the governor of the state of New York when you have to. But you give up the basic freedom of any labor person to stand up and be part of a collective that says we want to change. There are no changes in this country because one individual just stood up and said yes. It's because people stand up every day. The idea of NAFTA and all the other conglomerates around the world, when you look at what people are paid around the world, some of the companies we deal with every day would still like to give you a dollar a day to pay your wages and not pay your pensions, because in the old days, everybody had a pension. Now it's a 401k if you're lucky, and don't count that as luck. We're all in this fight together, as the governor said. But let me make it clear. On behalf of the 300,000 men and women who every day take care of the public in this state, we intend to be around for another 108 years. CSEA has been around for 108 years, not because of agency fees, but because we are a voice for those members, and we give them the opportunity to stand up and fight for what they believe in. And joining with the governor, we'll fight anybody for this, including that lunatic in the White House. Because if his idea of freedom is just do what I tell you, I know some people named Hitler, Mussolini, and Stalin who he could have mentored everywhere he goes. If that sounds kind of crude, let me be kind about it. I'm not going to be obscene about him, but I do know he can't be just let off the hook by saying, oh, he's misunderstood. Well, he's not this, he's not that. He's a liar. Imagine this. The best thing we can say about the President of the United States is that he lies. We shouldn't condone it. We should hold him accountable and fact check him for everything he does. But we in the labor movement, especially in the public employee side, are ready to fight him and anybody else that comes down the street to protect our rights and all the things we fought for over the years. We're not giving up to anybody, and we're proud to stand shoulder to shoulder with the governor, as I said, to make sure that nobody takes us for granted.
Danny Donahue of CSEA asks me. Michael Mulgrew is next, speaking in response to the Supreme Court's ruling on Janus versus AFSCME and in favor of Governor Cuomo's executive order prohibiting state entities from publicly disclosing home addresses, phone numbers, or personal email addresses of state employees. Mulgrew is president of the UFT, the United Federation of Teachers, which represents the city's public school teachers.
Earlier at the beginning of this year, or the school year, I know that there were groups of us talking about what was the strategy for us in New York this year, and there were many conversations about, first and foremost, protecting New York from some of the craziness, and at that point, we had all sorts of ideas of different things that would be coming from the Washington, D.C., and that's one of the reasons why we're here today. But in those conversations, it was clear, it was first, have a understanding of all of us working together about the role of New York and the importance that we're going to play in the national debate moving forward. And then have make sure that we are also not just playing defense, that we have a way to constantly push out things that are good and things that should be happening on really what is the most important thing, which is protecting and growing communities. And I can't thank this governor enough, because you have obviously kept to your word, you have led by actions, and it is important that New York is here today, the first state reacting and taking governmental action against this horrendous decision from the Supreme Court. And let's talk about the Supreme Court at this moment. Justice Kagan put it nicely, they have weaponized the First Amendment. And as the governor said, the Supreme Court was supposed to be the one body above politics at all times. And it is clear at this point that it has become perverted and twisted by a political group of people who have been scheming for years to take this country in a direction that they believe works for them and them only. And this is our fight as we move forward. And I know 30 years from now, when UFT members are teaching in our schools, they will teach about what happened at this point in time in this country. And they will talk about how labor unions stood up, about how communities came together, and about the elected officials who said, we're not going to have this. And they will teach about the Supreme Court justices who perverted the entity that was supposed to protect and be the fairness for this entire country. So I look forward, as we move forward in this fight, to making sure that New York is out there loud and proud, and more importantly, that we continue to kick these people where they deserve to be kicked. And as I promised my mother numerous times, I will pray for all of them when they're burning in hell.
UFT President Michael Mulgrew. And that's the WBAI Evening News for Thursday, June 28th, 2018. I'm Linda Perry reporting. Have a good evening.
54 years ago this week, the Ku Klux Klan murdered my older brother, Andrew Goodman, in Mississippi.
New York's David Goodman, president of the Andrew Goodman Foundation, was in Washington, D.C. for the Poor People's Campaign.
In 1964, extremist state and local authorities tolerated murder and intimidation of people of color and democracy workers, while most of their white fellow citizens were both sympathetic and silent. It was only through the disciplined black leadership and a small group of activist people, including my brother, James Cheney and Michael Schwerner, and 800 young volunteers in Freedom Summer 1964, that many Americans woke up and realized that our country was on a seriously wrong and immoral track. Now, it's 2018, and many of us are feeling as if it's 1964 all over again. The same horrible strain of racism expressed by Jim Crow and the KKK during Freedom Summer is again showing its ugly head in policies coming out of extremist state legislatures and governors. And just like the past, they are creating new laws and practices that restrict access to needs of the poor, like health insurance, and restricting access to the ballot box. They're connected. Just a couple of weeks ago, the Supreme Court gave its blessing to the Ohio's blatant voter suppression scheme. That's why we need a national call for moral revival. Joining together for the Poor People's Campaign in support of these extraordinary two people, Bishop Barber and Liz Theo Harris. I can call all of us, particularly young people across the country, to carry on the legacy of Andrew Goodman, James Taney, and Michael Schwerner. We stand together with the young people today and all of us. Forward together.
Not one step back.
Forward together.
Not one step back.
forward together. Thank you.
David Goodman, and you're tuned to listener-sponsored WBAI New York.